Welcome to Extra Sequential, the weekly podcast coming at you from Perth in WA, which is Western Australia, as opposed to Eastern Australia. Well, there isn't an Eastern Australia, I should clarify. But our state is called Western Australia. Yeah, my name's Chris.
My name's Martin.
That was
drawn out. This is episode 17, or should I say episode Goldeneye of the Extra Sequential podcast. I looked it up. It was Goldeneye.
Oh, it is Goldeneye.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that was quite fitting because we did mention the Green Lantern film trailer last week.
True,
which was directed by the director of Goldeneye.
Yeah, that weird old Green Lantern trailer. If you want to hear our thoughts on it, check out last week's show. But this week, we're going to be giving you some more rambling, random thoughts. There'll be some news items, which Chris will reveal very soon.
You keep saying news.
What?
Instead of news. You keep saying news.
Yeah,
like
so what?
N-O-O-S. It's news. You need to pronunciate your vowels. News, it's not noose without the E.
Well, do you pronounce everything right? You know, people who like outs themselves as grammar Nazis, when you make a mistake, it's going to hurt, and I'm going to draw everyone's attention to it. Just you wait.
Well, when that day happens, I will be very humble and apologetic.
Yeah, you will be humbled.
So, yes, we're going to be talking about a bunch of news. We're going to be talking about what we've been reading.
Right, that.
I'm going to be talking about the new Call of Duty Black Ops game.
KK.
We're going to be talking about a couple of books that we've both read, kind of horror, both horror books, I guess, but one's more sexy and sultry and one's more cartoony and kid-friendly.
Yep, and those will be previews. Those are coming out soon, so we're getting advanced books, my friends. Advanced books.
Actually, they'll already be out by the time this goes.
Really?
Because we're recording this in the past.
And the Back to the Future video games are coming out soon, so it all ties together.
They've released some new stills from that, I believe.
Yeah, actual game, like in-game stills, and it looks pretty good, I thought.
Cool.
I'd play it.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's get to the news, shall we?
Here's the news.
The new US Superman, we still don't know what it's called. If it's going to be Superman Begins Again, Superman Returns Again.
Do you reckon Man of Steel? Yep. Do you reckon?
It might just be called the Man of Steel, which is possible. And Matthew Good, which is he's a British actor, I believe.
Watchmen?
A pretty boy. Yes, he was Ozymandias, the main bad guy in Watchmen. He was also in a bunch of other films. Most recently, you've probably seen him in Cemetery Junction, which is the film by Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant, the British duo behind The Office TV series, the original, not the American remake. So it's actually not a bad film, Cemetery Junction, and far better than Ricky Gervais's previous films, which are not amusing or funny at all.
The one of Greg Kinnear.
So, yeah, that's the one, and The Invention of Lying, which basically just Spatcher's gone through most of it and wasn't very fun at all. Anyway, so Matthew Good may be cast as Clark Kent. He's worked with Zack Snyder before, director Zack Snyder, who obviously directed Matthew Good in Watchmen and is directing the upcoming Superman film. So the rumour at the moment, Matthew Good might be him as Clark Kent, and then what they'll do for Superman is they'll enhance his body with CGI.
Sounds disturbing. Reminds me of that Nicolas Cage Superman outfit. With a glowing purple enhanced bodysuit.
Yes.
That's the direction we need to go.
And possibly Anne Hathaway as Lois Lane, but that seems like a wild rumour at this stage. Mainly, if they don't go for Matthew Good, they're looking for a 28 to 32-year-old unknown or TV star to play Superman. So, it sounds intriguing.
How old's the dude from Mad Men? Everyone seems to love him. You know the guy. He's got the
John Hamm.
John,
that's the one with two M's. Yes, he's more middle-aged. I think he's like 40-something. But, yeah, people seem to like him, but I guess he's a bit too well-known. And he's got the look. I mean, he's got kind of the
Chiseled
jaw.
Oh, my gosh.
Giselle's an actress, a model.
Features.
So he could work. He's got the barrel chest kind of look, but he's probably a bit too old to carry a whole trilogy or more of Superman films.
Well, not if they spit them out one after the other. Here's hoping. But he looks just like him, I think. Matthew Good. He's kind of skinny, I guess, isn't he? So it'll be another...
Oh, yeah, but... So was Christopher Reeve and even Brandon Routh to some stage. But Superman's, I mean, despite the Schwarzenegger-like physique in the comics, he's never going to make that happen in the films, really.
Well, Christopher Reeve did put some muscle on, didn't he?
He did.
Mm. And he was, I think he had training from David Prowse, who was originally one of the names, who played Darth Vader.
Yes.
Yeah. He was originally one of the names to play Superman in
Man, you wouldn't believe the names they spit out back in the, this is the late 70s. Clint Eastwood, I think Al Pacino, I think Paul Newman, a whole bunch of people to play.
Paul Newman
Superman
could have been fun. I like
70s, but I guess they're all too famous at that stage.
What about Warren Beatty?
Yeah, it's possible. He played Dick Tracy. Whatever happened to him?
Yeah, no, I just watched Bonnie and Clyde like last night. Really good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have been his cat film, I guess.
I think so, very early on. But what other news items did we have? Got sidetracked.
There is a Lock and Key TV series. That's Lock with an E on the end. A Lock and Key is it's a comic series written by the son of Stephen King. His name is Joe Hill. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he hates being referred to as that, and he's got his own career now. Joe Hill has written a couple of novels, mm-hmm. But primarily his most famous work is A Lock and Key, which is a comic series that IDW have been publishing since 2008.
This is a spin-off of Lost starring John Locke, is that correct?
It could be a sitcom starring John Locke and someone with the
surname. Someone key. We'll give this one some thought.
Yeah.
Misdirection.
It's a very successful series. The current miniseries in the comics is called Keys to the Kingdom, and that's just started. I think it's up to the second or third issue now. Mark Romanek is directing the pilot, and he's basically just a TV commercial director at this stage. Aussie actress Miranda Otto from Lord of the Rings has been cast as the widow Nina Locke, who's kind of the head of the household. Mm. Basically what happens, I haven't read the series, but what I understand is her family. So just her and her, I think, three sons move to this key house, it's called, which is a huge mansion somewhere in America, and they discover that every door leads to, like, a different place or a different universe, mm-hmm. and then within those places or universes, there's a bunch of powerful keys that do different stuff, and people have psychic powers, and the comic series just been very, very successful, so it could be a good TV series, you know. It could be another, who knows, you know, in 5-10 years' time, if the world gets sick of comic book movies, perhaps TV series will be the way. We know the Walking Dead TV series is doing very well. Chewy, we know that's becoming a TV series, as we discussed last week. Mm. So, yeah, perhaps that's more in close to the format of the comic book at this stage.
It sounds
an ongoing saga.
It sounds like these creators are getting a lot of mileage out of the whole Lock and Key thing. It's very, remember that Simpsons episode where they were pitching a sitcom and it was called Handle with Care? John Handle is a retired police officer, you know.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if the characters ever turn to each other and go, oh my God, my name's Locke and your name's Key. What?
Well, I don't know if there are any characters called Key, but it just could be.
It's called the Key Mansion, isn't it?
It's the object's key. The Key House, yeah.
Oh, sorry, so. Key House. Cubby House, yes, Key House.
Yeah.
I know what I was talking about.
The Comic-Con registration, probably a couple of weeks ago now, we mentioned that Comic-Con, which is the biggest English-language-speaking comic convention on the planet, held late July in San Diego every year. So next year, obviously 2011, Comic-Con registration was supposed to open. Well, it did open on Monday, just gone, November the 22nd, from a new company called Epic. Mm-hmm. And it failed, so they were just flooded again by people trying to get on. This is the second time they tried to do this, and it failed yet again. The servers were crashed, and it was down. Nobody got their tickets. Mm-hmm. So obviously the company that was running was called Epic, so you saw all the comments on the message board. You could imagine what they said.
Mm.
Epic fail. Epic fail. So so it's supposed to open again, so I don't know. If they better fix it soon, otherwise nobody's going to go to Comic-Con. So
I doubt that's going to happen, Chris.
Otherwise, people have to get their tickets by some other way. So, so if you are hoping to go to Comic-Con next year, you've still got a good chance. It's just as good a chance as anybody else. You just got to. But it was annoying because some people were saying they kind of, you know, went to work early or had the day off or whatever, because you have to be online at a specific time.
Freaking like, crybabies.
Like,
I'm
a very small window.
I have no patience for these people.
Apparently not. Have you got anything you'd like to report, good sir?
I do. Alexander Payne, director of, was it About Schmidt and Sideways, is potentially going to direct a movie adaptation of Daniel Clowes's Wilson comic or slash graphic novel.
I think
novel.
You'll find it's more than potentially. I think you'll find that it's a definite thing, I believe, because it's I think it's listed on his IMDb page. So, yeah, it looks like he's good to go.
Even projects which don't get developed get listed on IMDb. As long as they're in development, they get listed on there. So nothing's definite. Saying it's just a potential thing right now, but it's almost a certain thing if they can get everyone on board. But Daniel Clowes is writing the screenplay himself, which is what he did for Ghost World and Art School Confidential. I really like the Ghost World movie. Haven't seen Art School Confidential. So, And Wilson...
It's not too bad.
Oh, really? Okay. It's not LA Confidential, but...
No, Kim Basinger is not in this one.
Is it as entertaining? No?
Ghost World's better.
Ghost World's better. All right, fair enough. And... what was I going to say? Yeah, this is the one we reviewed when Johnny was joining us a couple of weeks ago, so you can catch our review of it there. Pretty cool comic. You can get this. You can get the lowdown of what it's about. Basically, the dude's found out he's a father, and he goes to track down his daughter and his estranged girlfriend, and he kind of kidnaps his daughter, and they go on a road trip. And the whole comic was told in every page was in a different style of like a Sunday strip. So I'm guessing that'll get lost in the film translation, but you never know. They might do something weird with like visual styles or something. I'd be entertained.
Could be good.
And is that all we have?
That's all we got, baby.
Stop that.
Wrap it up like a Christmas present.
Yeah, that time of year is coming soon.
Put a bow on it, man.
Put a sock in it, Chris. Enough rambling. Let's get on to what we've been reading. This week, I have checked out a kind of a new series. It's being published by Viz Media. It's called Oku. So that's OOKU, The Inner Chambers by Fumi Yoshinaga. And it tells a tale of a hypothetical feudal Japan where all of the men have... there's a terminal disease going around that's killed off, say, 3/4 of the male population. So men are in high demand for breeding and such.
I'm moving there.
You're loving it.
That's the only chance I'll get.
This sounds like my kind of comic.
Sounds like Why the Last Man, but not really.
Yeah. I guess it would start at a similar period if it was being published when I'm imagining, because Viz picks things up usually a couple of years after. But it's very different. All the men, because they're in such high demand, the shogun, who's now a female, she has like a harem of attractive men. And this one dude sort of ends up there, but he was sort of trained for fighting and stuff, so he doesn't fit in with all the Nancy boys who like do their hair up all pretty. And they try and bed him on the first night he's there, and he fights them off, so he attracts some attention. But the main conflict of it is, if you're the first man to sleep with the shogun, like the woman, the problem is you will be put to death, because even though you're doing this thing, you're injuring her person, if you get my meaning. She's a virgin. if you're her first, you see what I mean? So it's kind of a, it's not a catch-22, but it's a sticky situation. So they have to, she feels like she didn't realize when she selected him, and now they have to find some way to weasel out of this situation without humiliating everyone. It's pretty cool. I love these, I guess there's all the sexual tension and stuff. Really, really quite a cool comic. The art's pretty, straightforward, but it conveys that kind of, it's a good drama. I jump on if you're interested in a drama which presents a kind of a cool concept and potentially some good stories that are going to spin off of this. So I'm going to keep reading more.
So there's quite a few volumes at this stage?
I think so. I don't know if there's that many yet. Viz is still putting them out, so I'm definitely running to my comic store and getting more.
I don't think you'd run to your comic store. When was the last time you ran anyway?
That's not fair. I've jogged. I've had to catch a bus here and there.
Yeah, okay.
When was the last time you ran?
Well, yes.
This is getting personal. I don't like this. What have you read?
Don't mark my jogging.
Hey, I read while walking to work. Thank you.
That's dangerous, Maladin.
It's not, because I can do two things at once. Heyo. Anyway, you go.
I have been playing Call of Duty Black Ops, which is awesome.
It's like a comic book, is it?
Nothing like it. Well,
damn it.
It's called Call of Duty Black Ops, but me and my friend Jason at work have been referring to it this week as COD Blops.
What?
Did you play COD Blops last night?
I didn't get it.
Call of Duty Black Ops, so we just like shorten the word and call it COD Blops because it sounds funny.
Blops.
COD Blops. Yeah. What am I talking to you for?
This is going nowhere. Did you enjoy shooting people in your violent game, Chris? Did you shoot a man in the face?
Me and 7 million other people, so we can't be wrong. Yeah, it sold 7 million copies in the first 24 hours, which broke the record. The previous record was set by a similar game, Modern Warfare 2, by 2.4 million copies. So, yeah, it's pretty much it's set mainly in the 1960s, and as you go around, you play a few different characters. And basically you just try and save the free world. It's awesome. It's just, it's like they've taken every great scene from an action movie and just whacked it in a game for, you know, 10 hours of pure entertainment. So, yeah, I finished the game. Loved it. The cutscenes were awesome. It's got, like, Sam Worthington's voice in there, Gary Oldman's voice is in there.
Oh, that's good.
And then at the end you fight zombies in the Pentagon as John F. Kennedy.
Zombies?
What? In the Pentagon.
I thought Call of Duty was, like, a serious...
It is, but it's like an extra level. If you watch all the credits, you can play. Okay. And when you go online, you can play multiplayer and you fight zombies and you can either play JFK, Robert McNamara, Fidel Castro, or Richard Nixon. And you're basically just going around shooting zombies.
Yeah.
And it's also got explosive remote control cars, which are awesome. So you can control these cars to chase your enemies and then blow them up and watch them flee.
So how does this affect the debate of whether video games are art?
Well, they are art. I mean, the big thing at the moment is that everybody wants to make a video game that can make you cry. They can just invest you in the characters, and they reckon it's like 4 or 5 years away where you just invest yourself so much in the characters that... Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, they keep saying that, you know, video games are making more money than Hollywood. You know, I mean, 7 million people, that's in 24 hours. That's more people than will see all the Twilights and Harry Potter combined, obviously. So, yeah, and it's good. I mean, games are, I think you'd be quite impressed if you saw today's current games. Obviously, there's bad ones, and the good ones are sometimes few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
But when a good one comes along like this, it's very engrossing in a way that even the best comics can't be necessarily, you know.
I'm sure the only people who'll be crying for this are the descendants of John F. Kennedy. And maybe John himself.
I suppose they had to get his likeness.
Yeah, how do you secure rights to that? It's going to be a respectful treatment of his memory. He'll be fighting the zombies, which represent non-American interests. I don't know how you pitch this, eh?
Yeah, true. Well, it obviously worked. But really? I've also been watching the original Star Trek films. I don't know why. But
I'm curious about those, yeah.
They're awesome. I have on DVD, they released probably a year or two ago, just the first six of the original films, so not the Next Generation films, which started with the Generation, but just Star Trek, the motion picture, through to Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, I think the last one was called.
I've seen the one of the whales. Is that...
That's Star Trek IV, the
Voyage
Home. So it's
a late one. Okay.
They're all awesome, except for maybe the first one.
Oh, really?
But, yeah, so I've just watched Star Trek II, which is the one where Spock died. So Leonard Nimoy said, oh, I've had enough of this Star Trek stuff, you know. And they hadn't made a movie in years. Like, the first time they made a movie was, like, you know, what, 10, 20 years after the TV show ended in 1969, I think.
Wow.
But then during the making of the motion picture and the second one, he said, actually, I had a lot of fun, so maybe just don't kill me just yet. And then they kind of gave this backdoor way that it could come back. And actually, I'm watching Star Trek 3 now, The Search for Spock, and Spock comes back to life. Mm-hmm. And it makes complete sense. Like some even just comic book resurrections make no sense whatsoever. But this just makes it like it's just a perfect way that he could come back to life. Star Trek II is the one, The Wrath of Khan, where Ricardo Montalbano comes back as Khan, who we played in the 60s TV series, and most people will be familiar with that, where Shatner goes, Khan!
Times. Oh, boy. So that was Star Trek?
They're good films, yeah. Compared to today's modern films, and even obviously the Star Trek, the remake that J.J. Abrams did, these films are actually kind of quaint. And they're almost more like a drama. Like, there's not lots of action. There's not even music during some of the emotional scenes or the fight scenes. It's just kind of silence. But the dialogue's just awesome.
Yeah.
William Shatner's a good actor. You know, when people impersonate him, they kind of do like an Adam West impression. But he doesn't act like that at all. He doesn't do that. The cards
like that?
Yes.
Yeah. You do one.
Klingons killed my friend. No, he doesn't talk
they
like that.
They killed my friend.
Yeah, like that.
My friend. Yeah. That's you have to...
That's what it is, records. But, he's a really good actor. So, and he's quite the character, old Kirk.
Mm.
So, yeah, the original Star Trek films, I mean, most of them are in the 80s. But they're really good. I enjoy them.
Nice. How do they compare to the original Star Wars films? I'm curious.
More happens in the Star Wars films. Like, not a lot happens necessarily in the Star Trek films, in these original films. Like, they don't flip from location to location. There's not that many cast of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And each film has a different villain, so there's not one recurring villain. I mean, there's Klingons usually show up, but...
Mm-hmm.
So they're more kind of done in ones, whereas the Star Wars films, I guess, are kind of... Well, no, that's not true. The Star Trek can be, especially 2 and 3, because you've got Spock dies and 2 comes back. Oh, yeah.
So that's an overarching thing that happens. Because I quite dig some 70s science fiction. I liked Boy and His Dog and Outland, you know, that Sean Connery.
Oh, is that the one where he's like posing in leather underwear and he's in the cover or something?
No, that's Zardoz, which I've seen as well, and it's probably not so much worth watching. It is funny, though. See Zardoz if you want to laugh.
Is it meant to be funny?
No. I suspect Sean Connery was thinking, oh, okay, this will be funny. But no one else involved realized. I mean, how could you have a scene where Sean Connery with like a handlebar mustache is in a wedding gown?
What?
He's in a bridal wedding gown. Yeah, don't worry. That's all you need to know. Look up Zardoz. If you ever seen pictures of Sean Connery in like a orange sort of... underwear, I can't describe it, like a nappy. It's a big orange nappy, and that's what you should. That's your next film you should be watching. Can I mention a comic I read?
Already?
What?
Can we keep talking about films?
No, go for it. What do you have? Go on.
No, nothing. I'm just being silly.
Okay. I read.
You want to talk about Mexican wrestling?
I did want to talk about Mexican wrestling. Speaking of half naked Sean Connery, he is a half naked Mexican wrestler. Oh, that was terrible. Anyway, this is El Borba by Charles Burns. They've been collecting some of his older, like 80s indie comics, you know, from Raw and the other, like, Raw was at Art Spiegelman. Independent magazine, and a few other of his works have been collected. Big Baby, which I haven't got yet, but El Borba's really cool. It's a detective comic starring a Mexican wrestler who's like a hard-boiled type. So just not in time for our detective special last week. El Borba's a hard-talking... he doesn't punch. He sort of just gives people like... not wet willies, but like Indian burns and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And there's a great scene where he gets shot in the shoulder, and then for the rest of the comic, he's got this bleeding wound in his shoulder, which he just ignores. And it'll just smoking like, that hurt. It's pretty good stuff. And... If you're wondering, you know those Mexican wrestler types. That's what Bane is, isn't he?
He was. Not in the comics, but Bane was the guy that broke Batman's back.
Well, there's a reason he wears that mask.
Back in the 90s, well, they played it more up in the animated series. They made him more like a Mexican wrestler, but in the
Batman
comics, he was just a prisoner who just threw on a mask.
Yeah, there's a great story in here where. There's a scam being run at a cryogenic center where they're what they're doing is the people who've been frozen, they're cloning their bodies and stitching their heads onto cloned baby versions of themselves. So there's all these guff talking, cigar smoking babies with old man heads and droopy skin. Pretty cool stuff.
Pretty freaky.
Yeah, and it's Charles Burns, so you've got to expect like pig fetuses in jars. And, other fun stuff.
General creepiness.
General creepiness.
David Lynch stuff. Style shenanigans.
A dude who works at a sperm donor center and has secretly been creating an army of children of his own from unsuspecting women. Pretty fun stuff to take over the world. Good stuff. Yeah, check out this one, El Borba. Very funny. I find Charles Burns' work can be extremely funny. It's just really bizarre. Anyway.
I have been reading a book called Rift Raiders. It's a 96-page OGN, original graphic novel, and it's more in it's an actual digest format, so kind of like a manga size. It's full colour, and there's a story behind me reading this. Every day I go to work, obviously, because that's where I get money to buy comics.
You wouldn't know.
And my bag is always stuffed filled with comics because, you know, each train ride's a good 40 minutes. So I've always got comics in my bag. Yesterday, luckily, I had more than my average share because the train broke down on my way back home, and I got home an hour later than I normally would. I was stuck, me and a whole bunch of other people, obviously, were stuck on the train for an hour because what happened was the train before us on the tracks lost its power. Hmm. So the conductor was, excuse me, folks, we're just going to go up behind. There's going to be a slight bump as we hook into the carriage, and we're just going to, and there was a mighty thump. So he kind of hooked in, and then we maybe pushed for about 10 seconds, and then we broke down. So they had to send a third train to push the both of us. And all the barriers were down, so the cars couldn't move anywhere. The police had to come and redirect traffic. Some guy, I don't know how, he managed to emergency open the doors. Very strong, and he like, threw his bag out in the bushes and commando rolled out. Outside.
Oh, gosh.
None of us were going to follow him. So I read this on the train yesterday, basically. it's a new book from a new company called Kickstart, not the Kickstarter.com, but Kickstart Productions. They've been around for a while doing TV and film shows, and this is kind of their first foray into comics. Go to kickstartcomics.com. It's pretty good. It's written by Mark Sable with art by Julian Tedesco. Or his proper name is Julian Totino Tedesco. Those two guys worked together on a series called Unthinkable from Boom Studios, I think last year or the year before. Basically, it's about four orphans in a boarding school, and they've got like this strict headmaster guy, and one of the new guy basically discovers that the four of them, all their parents are time travelers, and their parents have been going to different eras, basically gathering experimental weapons to stop a kind of traitor gathering all the weapons for himself and remaking the world in his image. So they'll go to like King Arthur's court, the four kids, they'll grab Excalibur, they'll go and get Da Vinci's flying prototypes, and then they go to like the Civil War 1800s in America, and they get this Gatling gun suit, mecha suit from this guy. It's pretty fun. It's like it's full color. The art is kind of sketchy, almost like Sean Murphy, who does Joe the Barbarian at the moment with Grant Morrison.
Right.
Is that sketchy yet quite frenetic style. So if you like Sean Murphy's work from Joe the Barbarian, you'll definitely like the work here in Rift Raiders. It's pretty harmless enough, and it is a done in one. Sometimes the scenes move rapidly, so it's not a start of a series, but there's a great like double page spread where the kids are jumping out of this like swirling time portal, and they're going, "Oh my science!" And there's like the Titanic behind them, and then there's the pyramids, and then there's like big zeppelins, and then there's like jets, and then there's like pilots, a dinosaur guy, because they kind of mess with time, and then they go up to a future where humans are kept in zoos and dinosaur people rule the earth. They've kind of like evolved in that. Like so it's pretty good. They jump here, there, and everywhere. Yeah, perhaps a little too quickly. Like you could see that if it was going to be an ongoing series, they could. There's a lot to play with. I mean, they go to meet actual figures, but they also go to, you know, Stuart Head and Medusa. They get, as I said, Excalibur and that kind of stuff. So it's kind of got one foot in fantasy, one in reality. It's pretty fun. There's no swearing or blood or anything like that. And, it's a pretty good book. You could almost see it like as a Disney original movie or something like that, even though it would be quite an epic budget. But it's fun. The art is great. It moves at a cracking pace. And, so that's called Rift Raiders, and it's from Kickstart Comics.
It reminds me of Runaways a bit.
That's a good way. Yeah, Runaways from Marvel Comics. The kids discover their parents are supervillains.
That's right. And one of the kids is a spitting image of Alex from that comic.
The Kid of the Aff. Series. I think they were trying to make a TV series of that
Runaways. Movie. Yeah, last I heard it was going to be a movie. So they're thinking of adapting everything now, so... Whenever we mention a comic, just assume someone's trying to make a movie of it, okay? It just saves all of our time. I mean, if you can get Cowboys versus Aliens as a movie, anything can happen. So,
yeah. Them remaking Buffy.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, Josh Whedon. Yeah, because the guys, the producers that made the original film with Christy Swanson and Pretty Boy from Beverly Hills 90210, Luke Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Before Buffy the TV series
came
in, like, what, 99, 2000. So I think they still own the rights to that movie rather than the TV series.
So it's a sequel to that.
Yeah, so they're basically remaking the film. So obviously the internet is like, this is the worst idea ever. The Buffy TV series is like, it's awesome. When I went to uni, someone introduced it to me, and it'd have to be in my top five TV shows of all time. It's just awesome.
My gosh.
I hope they leave that film alone. No one will see it. Who knows?
Should we
talk a bit? What's that?
I was going to say they'll probably try and appeal to the lowest common denominator on this one. I mean,
yeah,
like it's got werewolves in it this time.
There's a lesbian kiss or something stupid.
They'll play up, they realize, wait, so there was another TV show where a vampire fell in love with a human girl.
Yeah.
This is like printing money. My gosh, we should make it. Buffy.
Oh boy. Shall we talk about a couple of comics that we have both experienced?
Hi. Yes, that means yes.
Was that Scottish or was that allergy?
That was Japanese.
So
completely off. Okay.
Let's talk about Vampirella.
Okay, Vampirella it is.
Vampirella, with a name like that, it pretty much tells you all you need to, all you need to know.
So this is a relaunch of another relaunch of Vampirella? Is that what
kind of. Mm. Yeah, she's been around since, I think, 69. She was like probably the first kind of bad girl in comics, which is a big craze in the 90s where all these scantily clad superheroines would kind of use sex and violence to punish crime. She was originally published by Warren Publishing in a bunch of different magazines. And then Harris Comics, I think, took her in from about 83, 82, and then they stopped publishing her recently. Now Dynamite Entertainment have the rights to Vampirella, so she's been off the shelves for quite a while, or at least off the mainstream comic shelves for quite a while. So Dynamite also published books like Lone Ranger, Kevin Smith's Green Hornet, which is adapted from the Kevin Smith Green Hornet screenplay, The Phantom, you know, Sherlock Holmes, Alice in Wonderland. So they do a lot of quite well-known characters.
Mm.
Vampirella, number one, as you said, it's kind of a relaunch, so, and that's out this week. And it's quite the coup for them because it's quite a – I mean, she's quite a much-loved character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first glance, you think she's
– okay, so she's some sort of vampire-hunting vampire, so she's kind of like Blade, right?
She's like a more sexy female Blade.
And what they've done – you probably recognize Vampirella's look. She basically nude – well, originally she was basically nude, except like a kind of a V-strap –
Red bathing suit,
but yeah, so pretty foxy, but they've kind of redone her in a kind of contemporary take in the same vein as the new Wonder Woman costume, I thought.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I don't know if she'll go back to her original costume, which shows a lot of flesh, but I don't know, maybe she'll go to, but yeah, that was the first thing I noticed, like, when the comic, she's got like a big black trench coat on, she's got like a red blouse, she's got black gloves, she's got red sunglasses, like, you can't see any part of her flesh apart from her neck, and a bit of cleavage, so I suppose, I mean, obviously that was a conscious decision.
But honest thoughts on it, what do you think?
I liked it. I've seen it be a bit controversial, and I suppose people haven't read Vampirella for a while now, and
what's,
I didn't
what's
read.
Controversial, sorry?
Just some people hate it, some people love it.
Oh, the character. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Well, just and this comic, but I actually enjoyed it. It wasn't too bad at all. We should point out that it's written by Eric Trautman. He's done some video game stuff, I believe, and also some stuff for DC with art by Wagner Rice, whose name I'm not familiar with. And basically, the comic is told from Vampirella's perspective. So she's kind of walking around the alleys at night, as you do, kind of looking for trouble, and she runs out. She runs into this homeless man just being attacked by a bunch of other homeless people, and then she sees that these cops are looking at this beating and not doing anything about it. And then she realizes that the cops are vampires, and then she discovers this biter club, which is like a kind of a vampire fetish club, I guess, run like a nightclub.
Mm.
And she meets a bunch of hungry vampires and their female leader.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what happens.
Yeah. I thought it was a bit, it was like vampire paint by numbers, if I'm being honest. Like, what do you need to do to quickly establish your superhero / vampire hunter as a badass? Have them beat up some muggers in an alleyway. It's like the biggest that is the biggest cliche in superhero comics. And
that is true.
It's like the first couple of pages. Anyone. Yeah, everyone does it. And if you, Daredevil, like anytime you quickly need to show someone up as being a cool dude, it's what you have them do. And then the next thing she does, she goes to a vampire nightclub, which is the first thing Blade does in the Wesley Snipes movie.
In the first film. And it was very memorable in that film.
Yeah, they had like the strobe lighting thing. I remember that. Was that it? Yeah, like strobe light vampire killing,
and
which was pretty
cool. Pours from the like sprinklers.
Oh, yeah, the sprinkler heads. Yeah.
All these people get whipped into a frenzy.
Mm. So there's nothing really original in this, and they kind of watered down her character. I thought, oh, this could be anyone.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's kind of one of the things I noticed. Well, as I said, I'm not that familiar with the character, but I know that she has had a bit of a... She's like Power Girl. She's had a couple of different origins over the years. Like, I think originally she was like an alien from this planet called Draculon, and then they retconned her to be like a daughter of Lilith, the first female vampire, or something like that. So here, we're not quite sure what continuity we're in. Like, if you've been a long-time Vampirella reader, you might not know what's her origin this time.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really talk about her origin at all, which is kind of unusual for its first issue.
Yeah.
She talks about that she fell in love with a man, like a mortal man, and then he died very briefly, just as a throw cast aside kind of comment. So we don't really know, is she working alone, is she working with anyone, how long she'd be doing this in this world.
It's a bit of a bait and switch, because the cover has that the classic Vampirella look, and on the inside she's this trench coat wearing kind of just normal character.
Yeah, I guess they did that because they knew Vampirella has such a distinctive outfit, like I said, with the red swimsuit, the white collar, the knee-high black boots. That's people, when people think Vampirella, they think that, like the first almost fetish costume of modern superheroes.
Well, my only memories of Vampirella are in the kind of Warren publishing. She was just kind of the who would introduce the stories as kind
of
like the Crypt Keeper.
But I think she appeared in some stories as well, unlike the other hosts, like Uncle Creepy or whatever his name was.
I think it was Uncle Creepy, But there's the cool, I like the backup story in this, which is by Tim Sale and Jeff Loeb or Loeb.
Yes, that's awesome. A lot of people have loved that. And originally published in 1999, because Vampirella's got such a long publishing history, so... I don't know if this is going to be a regular feature in this new series, that every issue they'll publish a backup. But
that was better than the main story, I thought. That story felt like a Vampirella story to me, which was about a writer who, he tracks her down and then he becomes like obsessed with writing vampire fiction and she turns him into a vampire. But she has a sexy outfit, like Tim Sale can sell the luscious vampire lady in the red bathing suit look.
Yes.
So more of that, please, less of the other thing. That's for me anyway.
Yeah, the backup is called Looking for Mr. Goodwin. And, Archie Goodwin was one of the real comics writers who developed Vampirella's character back in the 60s.
Right.
So, it's quite good. It's only, like, maybe 10 pages, but it's very noir-like. You know, she's like a femme fatale, works into his office, he's a writer, and she kind of realises that vampires have a PR problem, so she kind of wants to use him. But, yeah, it was very entertaining.
And he looks like...
In this main title, were you going to say he looks like Commissioner Gordon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're on the same page here.
Wow. So I just want to read out this. The main feature has got her narration. She's basically talking about herself, and then this jumped out at me. This is Vampirella speaking in the main feature. His pulse thunders beneath my fingers, a drum beat that promises a crimson feast. It's almost got that Sin City, almost quite over the top kind of narration.
That's what you want.
It. Like, it's quite in your face, and that's quite odd. But I think Troutman's done a good example of set out the world, but we just don't know enough about the character yet. And like you say, it's not startlingly original. It was mainly entertaining. It was more entertaining than I thought it would be, but I'd hope to find out more about her character. And I must say, the art is great. It's quite consistent. There's a lot of use of heavy blacks, and it kind of reminded me of Mike Diodata Jr. Work. He's been working on Marvel for years and years. He does Secret Avengers at the moment, so you're probably not that familiar with his work, Maladdin, but it's very similar to that. A lot of use of blacks.
Okay.
Black ink. And I found the art quite enjoyable enough. Okay. I mean, pretty good page layouts and good colouring and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd pick up the second issue, but it was entertaining enough, just not enough to... Go and read more.
Yeah, if you're interested in Vampirella but you don't like anything about Vampirella, check this out. So what else?
And you're right, this could be anybody. And it's probably not the best time to launch this new series, because vampires are just, and comic fanboys are the jaded at the best of times. So it'll be interesting. I'll be curious to see how long this series lasts.
Yeah, we're like the angry old men in Muppets. You know, sitting up in the theater, going, "This is terrible." You know, those guys.
They're making a new Muppets movie as well.
Yeah, starring that dude from
Jason Segel.
Yeah, from all of those.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Yeah, that guy.
My Mom, How I Fell in Love with Your Mom. What's that mom's TV show? How I Met Your Mother.
How I Fell in Love with Your Mum is pretty good. you should work for television, Chris. That was great. Nice. What I don't... Oh, have you watched... they've been releasing info about that Muppets thing. Just, I thought this was interesting.
Yes.
They've added, like, a new Muppets character. And he's... Yeah. But he's, like, a human Muppet. And he looks like a very boring guy. And he has a phone. That's his thing. He has an iPhone. So something tells me
he has an iPhone, really?
Yeah, like his thing is he likes using
his
phone.
They've only got like three fingers or something.
I'm guessing that'll be the running joke, maybe.
Yeah, it could be right there.
So I'm hoping he'll be. They won't focus too much of the film on him. He'll be like Lola Bunny from Space Jam. Like, I don't care about this character. I want to see the other characters.
Yeah.
Remember Lola Bunny?
Was she Bugs Bunny's love interest?
Yeah, she was the bunny with boobs from Space Jam, who had to wear clothes. Bugs didn't, which raises all sorts of questions. But let's change the topic completely. And Fire Breather.
From pantsless imaginary characters. Yes, Fire Breather is a new... Well, it's not a new series. It's from Image Comics. This is Volume 3. It's called Homergang. Homer, H-O-L-M-A.
Homganag.
That's the something like that. Yeah, you got it much better. So that Japanese pronunciation you do pays off.
I'm guessing it's Norse.
So this is Volume 3. So obviously, you know, what comes before 3. So yes, two volumes of Firebreather have come out before. And we should point out that the film debuted on the Cartoon Network on the 24th of November. I don't know how well it done, but they were basically a pilot and it was like a CGI kind of like that Clone Wars, Star Wars Clone Wars, that kind of look about it.
Okay.
A bit more polished and less mangery. So, this is by Phil Hastow with art by Andy Kuhn and Bill Crabtree, who I believe are the artists and writers and artists who have done all of Firebreather's work. Mm-hmm. Basically, it follows this guy, Duncan Rosenblatt, whose dad is like one of those big Godzilla-type monsters.
Yep.
And the last volume, kind of, he had to kill his father or he had to allow his father to die to kind of save the world and defeat these other guys. So basically Duncan he looks like a dragon, so he doesn't look human. He's got like orangey kind of skin. He can fly and breathe fire and all that kind of stuff. So he's dealing with not only being a teenager, going to high school, mixing with normal humans, but also, you know, he's the son of this huge dragon guy. And his parents are divorced, so there's a bit of tension with his mum and his dad and all that kind of traditional teenage angst stuff. But I enjoyed this. I enjoyed it much more than the Vampirella.
Yeah, me too. And the connection I felt between this and the Vampirella was, I think Andy Kuhn's art style is very Tim Sale in this. The kind of triangular faces, the blocks of shadow with that kind of the jagged line work. You can't help but think of a little bit of Mike Mignola as well, I think just because of the red kind of dragon thing. But
look, the kind of simplicity of the characters.
I kind of dug this. True. Yeah, I enjoyed this. I thought the story was quite fun. He's just acting like a jerk now, and his friends trying to get him to beat up these bullies, and his dad like just sort of subtly, sort of just making the situation happen. So then he resents that, like, stop using me. And then like the girl he has a crush on gets annoyed at him because he's like, you're judging me for my looks, and she's she tells him off for, well, why aren't you dating that other girl who clearly likes you? You like me because I'm blonde and skinny and blah. So I thought,
she's a bit plump and stuff. I was actually, I felt the dialogue, if you like Ultimate Spider-Man, which deals with the same kind of thing, you know, superhero, but with a teenage high school life, which can drama and action so well, Firebreather is really a good series to read as well.
It's quite approachable as a comic. I enjoyed it. And it's you're always sort of talking about comics which you think would appeal to new readers or people who really aren't, like, immersed in that world, and I think this is a prime example of a very approachable comic. And Image do some good stuff, so
they do,
and this is among them.
The dialogue rings true, I found as well. Like, it's not like a 40-year-old or whoever, I don't know how old Phil Hastow is, it doesn't seem corny, like, you know, like white kids trying to talk like gangsters, like hip hop videos, but it all sounds true. And even if you take out I'm the son of a dragon, all that kind of stuff. It could be just a dramatic script from a TV show or something like that. Like,
for
it's,
sure, yeah.
The dialogue was written, like I said, it revealed a lot about the characters, and Duncan Fibre, the main character, he comes across a bit whiny and almost at times like, this guy's my main character. But you think, well, he's a teenager. We were all like that at teenagers. Yeah. We all thought the world revolved around us.
We all have hang-ups about how we look and all that, so they do that sort of thing. I like, as you said, the characters, you can tell them apart, not just in their personality, but how they're drawn. It's very readable. You can enjoy flicking through it. There aren't 1,000 characters who you have to know everything about to understand what's going on. And yes, I thought they did a really good balance of like pacing in terms of character development and story and action. Like, there was a nice bit of action, and then you had these good moments. And then there's some action here you don't expect, like where one of the dads sort of hits his son for being a sassy brat. And he is being a sassy brat.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to praise this one.
Good. He gets the Lucatin stamp of approval.
Yes,
that's our now. It's 32 pages. It's from Image Comics, and it's just called The Fire Breather. Mm. If you're lucky enough, I guess, in the States to catch the movie on the Cartoon Network, then, hopefully they'll show it in Australia.
Maybe I'll check it out sometime next week. Who knows?
DVD or something. But it's a fire breather. Check it out.
Mm. And that draws us to a close on this 17th inaugural episode of... It's not inaugural. What does that mean?
I did the wrong that word. Means first, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. What's the... What do you say when it's 17th?
It's not the penultimate.
No, that's the second last.
It is.
Is this the second last episode?
Oh, I need to talk to you privately. No.
Oh, no.
Well, okay. There can't be a title for every number. There'd be an infinite number.
I'm happy with Goldeneye. That's good.
Yeah, it's a good place. It could be Sweet. Well, we could have used Sweet 16 last week.
I'm happy to use Goldeneye because, we should have used Sweet 16. What's wrong with us? Is it because we're not like teenage girls that we didn't occur to us?
Well, I'm 34, so I'm more than double 16, so I can't be expected to recall my adolescence.
I guess technically I am more of a teenage girl than you are.
Because you read manga?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, I guess 9-year-old boys read superhero comics, so we're set square here, it's fair enough. Hey, let's not get into that. Meow. Saucer of milk for Miss Lucatin. Anyway. Oh, this has gone on too long.
This is our show from this week. If you want to listen to all of our podcasts thus far, you can go on to extrasequential.com.
I would highly recommend you do exactly that.
We're on Mixcloud. You can go on my blog, which is comicjesus.com, which has daily stuff on there.
And music for the show is purgeaudit.com. And I want to hear some comments from people about the damn show because... Damn,
yeah, tell us
gosh.
What you think. We've got a few emails over the last few weeks, which is always good. But yeah, if you have comments you want to make, either on our blogs as mentioned or extrasequential.com. If you have a book that you'd like to mention that you really enjoyed, or if you think that you love Vampirella and hated Firebreather, we'd also be more than happy to hear from you.
Also, we can be bought. So if you want us to promote something, I mean, we're pretty cheap.
Bought for what? And to what end?
To promote things.
What would they purchase?
Entitle them to?
Yeah.
Oh, Chris, I can't say these kind of things on air.
Welcome to Extra Sequential Episode X18, now bought by Joe's Mattress Shack.
Time Warner's Extra Sequential, yeah. Oh, that would be great. Wow.
I think you'll probably find they have their own podcast, Ways and Means.
Time Warner. Yeah, they probably have a finger in every podcast.
Yeah.
That's enough.
Talk about fingers.
What?
And podcasts. I don't know.
Talk, we'll wave our fingers goodbye. Is that it?
Well, fingers can be used to read comics, so
that's a stretch. All right, see you.
See everyone. Thanks for listening, mate. Are you still recording?
Yeah, man, I'm still recording. Anything you do or say couldn't be used against you.
I'd never say or do anything that could be used against me, only for me.
Everything benefits you, Chris. Anyway.
Well, if you look at it in the right way, you are correct.
What?
Well, even bad things can still help you grow your character and understand what's important in life.
Is this a Christian thing? Let's not get into this on a comic book podcast.
That's also a Chris thing.